Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Pony Development Sync for June 6th, 2023. I'm your host, Joe McElvain. If those others on the call would like to say their name so that people listening along to the recording later can associate a name to the voice, now is a good time for that.
Hi, I'm Sean Allen.
By the way, we didn't hear anything, Adrian. Maybe your mic is broken too, like mine.
No, he's very, very, very quiet. I heard a tiny little sound.
Okay, I didn't hear anything.
But it's almost, that would be almost effectively broken, kind of like the almost effectively empty thing. Red, yes. Dippin, you want to say hi, either of you, both of you, while Adrian's working his thing out?
Hi, I'm Red.
Hi, I'm Dippin.
Adrian here.
Hey, we heard you.
All right. So as Sean cheekily mentioned, we have almost no agenda today in the auto-generated agenda from recent activity. Basically the whole time we have open for special topics. If anybody has special topics they'd like to raise and discuss, let's do that.
I do, but only if nobody else has anything. I'm guessing that means nobody else has anything.
Let's do it.
So I've been thinking about something. I brought this up on an office hours a couple weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago as well for a bit of conversation. And I was going to talk with you about it on Friday, Joe, but then I had to remove that snapping turtle from my koi pond and we didn't meet. Yes, I've been thinking about, and I wanted to see if folks had any thoughts on it, for actually introducing mutation testing into the compiler itself, and if that would be a good idea. Are you familiar with mutation testing, Joe? I believe everybody else on the call is, because I think they were all there when I discussed it with them 2 weeks ago.
I was not.
I think so, but perhaps you can, you know, enlighten us on the or enlighten me, I guess, on the specific differences, like of how you would characterize mutation testing versus fuzzing versus other attempts. Like, can you, I guess, be more specific about what you're thinking about?
Mutation testing is you have some series of operators, and the operators are things which will change aspects of your code and then run all of your tests are run against the changed code. And if you have good test coverage, then some tests should fail, whereas before you had all passing tests. So a simple example would be is in your code, you have if foo equals one, and an operator would be one which changes comparisons. So it could, a one mutant would be to change that to if foo is not equal to one, and if foo is greater than one, and if foo is greater, is less than one, that would be an operator there. There also could be operators for changing constants so that, instead of it being one, it could be two or three or zero or whatever that might be. And the idea behind mutation testing is to validate that the coverage that you have from tests is actually good, and that changes that might occur based on the operators that you select would be ones where if somebody accidentally or intentionally changes that thing, that you have tests which are actually covering it.
Right. Okay. Sounds good. So, and you're thinking about mutating the compiler itself, not mutating the
examples. Mutating, having a optional pass in the compiler, which will basically probably before we do code gen, be able to do mutations.
So mutating the AST?
Yes.
Okay. Got it. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely mutations that you could do to the AST that I would not expect to cause a behavioral change. But I guess that's the point, is that you need to weed out or specifically think about mutations that should definitely cause a behavior change.
Yes, well, and most mutation testing tools have a series of operators, and generally there's some set of them which are on by default and some which you have to turn on. And then of the ones that are on by default, you can turn them off if you want to. And usually mutation testing tools also work in conjunction with code coverage tools, as if you know line 10 of foo.pony is not covered by any test, then there's no point to mutating it, because clearly the mutant will survive, because there's no point to doing that mutation, because there's no test covering that line of code at all.
Okay. So you were talking about existing tools. Is there an existing tool that you think could integrate with mutating either the AST or the LLVMIR?
No, I think it would be our own written pass in order to do it. Or the other possible option would be is that we dump some representation at some point of the program, right? And then have a tool which operates on that. Those are the two basic ways that we can do it. The third way, which is done by some tools in general in the space, is to modify the source code directly, but those are usually more error prone and more clunky.
So and this is not about finding this is only about finding things that, well, I guess which what kinds of issues would you want to be fine? I think it would kind of maybe inform where to place it in the pass structure, for example.
You run a code coverage tool, right? And it says 100% of your lines are covered by tests, right? However, you can then run mutation testing over that same thing, and it could do, say, it's a small code base. There's 100 mutants that get created, and every single one of them survives, which means that no tests fail, which means that you might have 100% code coverage in theory, but literally every single thing which was changed caused no test to fail. So your actual test coverage is very poor. Right.
You're executing the code, but you're not checking that it does what you wanted it to do.
Right. Right. I think the way Adrian put it a couple weeks ago when we were talking about it was, he was like, oh, it's quality assurance for your quality assurance.
Yeah.
It's about testing when my tests consist of assert true.
Yeah. So I think something clicked for me, which I didn't understand before, which I think I understand now, which is that this is meant to be not a tool for finding problems in the way we compile, but this is a tool for end users of, well, I guess not end, but tool for users of Pony and writers of Pony programs to be more confident about their programs, not about our compiler or our passes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. There is a mutation testing plugin for Clang that if we wanted to ever do it on the compiler, we could, but that's not really my area of interest at this point in time. I mean, I know that we have tons of lack of coverage with the compiler, but I'm not worried about those per se.
Yeah, that makes sense. I kind of had the same thought when you introduced the topic. So yeah, I misunderstood until now. So yeah, it seems interesting. Yeah, so you were thinking this would be just prior to code gen.
Probably. The thing is that the two things which really help, so mutation testing in general, the larger the code base, the slower it is. I've used mutation testing in the past on like JVM code bases, where mutation testing is not something you really do in CI for an individual change, you know, because it can take hours to do a mutation testing run. So maybe you do it daily or weekly. And things that tools can do in order to speed up mutation testing are, one, work in conjunction with some sort of code coverage analysis so that you only do mutation on code which does have coverage, which makes sense because there's no point to it otherwise. And the other is, and I think is of particular interest here, is that for the as much as possible that you can do for reusing your compilation before you introduce mutations, the faster overall it would be. So if there's some place in compilation we can get to where you're basically saying, this is the state of our program at this point, and then I'm going to apply mutation A and we'll try running the tests, and I'll apply mutation B, et cetera, so that you don't have to recompile up to that point each time, that would be what would be able to make it the fastest. So I imagine for Pony that realistically would be right before we do code gen. That's my belief. But the biggest thing I wanted to talk with you about it is do you think that's the case? Like, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, my most immediate thought was right after code gen, and that also there may be existing tools that do it on LLVMIR rather than on our Pony specific representation. I'm not sure if that maybe defeats the point, or we maybe just have to choose the operators carefully so that you're not, like, I don't know, mutating something that like breaks the Pony runtime or breaks capabilities in a way that a program could never do. I think that's my main hesitancy with doing it at the LLVMIR level, is that maybe some of the mutation operators would introduce mutations that break the sort of invariance that the Pony compiler upholds. And so it wouldn't be giving you something useful because it's breaking something which will not in practice be broken. But it would be had the benefit of there being some existing tools like this one I linked to in the chat called Mole, apparently, which does it for LLVMIR already. Sorry, did I lose audio?
No, you did not.
Okay. You're just mulling it over.
I mean, I am familiar with Mole. I have trepidation about being like, yes, let's start relying on a tool which, you know, is basically an academic work.
That's fair. I mean, you could think of it as, let's provide an easy integration with the tool. Like one thing I was thinking about with this is, if we do it at the LLVMIR level, then you can sort of have a workflow where you use the Pony compiler to emit IR, and then you run an LLVMIR mutation tester with some Pony specific settings and configuration to avoid the problems I mentioned earlier about mutating things that are Pony compiler invariants. And then like you don't even need to run the Pony compiler again at that point. Like you can go straight from the mutated program and the mutated LLVMIR, you can go straight from that to running it without even invoking the Pony compiler at that point. But it could be that we provide some like, you know, nice workflow for doing that, that integrates nicely with some external tool without like making that external tool become a build dependency for the compiler and like being built into the compiler. It does look like, I'm only, you know, just reading about Mole right now, but it does look like Mole is at least somewhat tied in with Clang, right?
It appears that way for the, what they, it looks like for what they now actually have for the project that they're doing, they've dropped interest in, it seems like LLVM in general, and are targeting very specifically working with the C and C++ ecosystem for their stuff. Is that your impression from looking at it?
My impression did not go that far, but I would not be surprised to learn that. I just took a peek at the bottom, at additional information about Mole, right? There is a link entitled Mutation Testing for Swift with Mole, How It Could Work, Looking for Contributors. That is now a broken link. There's also one for Mole Meets Rust, which is a video that somebody presented in Berlin in 2017. So they may, like, it seems like other people have experimented to some degree or another with trying to use Mole for other languages, but it's unknown whether that actually is feasible.
Yeah, it looks like that certainly would be one possibility.
The broken link.
It also looks like Mole currently works on macOS and Linux. There is no Windows support.
Yeah. So the person who wrote about, I found the resulting link for Mole, or with Swift, the broken link that was earlier, this person changed their blog's, you know, link slug format. I'm just trying to see if there's a quick, like, all right. So this is from the same person who did the video about using Mole with Rust. So there's a, in the section it says, what has been done so far? What is missing? Let's see. It says a good part of the work is done. We can run Swift with Objective-C interoperability enabled with LLVM JIT. And I noticed that Mole no longer uses LLVM JIT because it's deprecated. And then it says, there's an extremely hacky branch on Mole where we're able to run Mole on a Swift/Objective-C code. The problem there is that Mole finds too many useless mutations in the LLVMR code generated by Swift's compiler, and there's no good way to filter these mutations out. So that's the problem, I think, that I was mentioning before about like useless mutations that would compromise the invariance of the compiler that preceded the LLVMIR. Yeah, such useless mutations are called junk mutations because they cannot be achieved by a mutation of a source code. So for a programmer, it's not possible to write tests that would kill such mutations. Usually these mutations are found in boilerplate code generated by a compiler, not in the code written by a human. It does not make sense to highlight these mutations to a programmer who's working on a mutation testing tool. Working with a mutation testing tool. So yeah, it sounds like that same problem that I was sort of anticipating. They didn't have a good solution for it in practice, somebody who had been trying for a while. So that's probably a good sign not to take this LLVMIR-based approach, I think.
Yeah, it does seem like or we'd have to take a specialized LLVMIR approach, right? Like they're taking the LLVMIR approach, but they're doing it seems like at this point, specifically targeting C and C++. So if we did that, we would probably want to write our own thing, perhaps, that that works with the LLVMIR, but is doing mutation testing and is specific to Pony code and can, you know, not run into junk mutations. But yeah. But if we do it right before code gen, then I don't think that we have that problem, right?
We have similar problems, I think. Imagine that you do it right before code gen and you introduce a mutation that consumes a local variable twice. Something that would have been caught by the compiler. And upheld as an invariant, like preventing compilation if you had mutated at an earlier stage. Lots of stuff like that we could do either intentionally or by accident.
I don't know how. I mean, that sounds like a bad operator for Pony that would do something like that.
Yes. I agree, although it may not be obvious. I guess the problem is that it may not always be obvious that your operator could do something like that.
Well, I think that would, I mean, that is, if we're doing it in the compiler on the Pony AST, I think that would be one where we'd be like, okay, we can't do that. We can't do that as an operator. Whatever this operator is doing is flawed.
Yeah. Where I'm conceptually going is that if we're trying to find user sort of inputs that could program inputs that program source code as inputs to the compiler that could be varying in different ways and not, I don't know. It seems like we might want to go as close to the front end as possible. For example, right after sugar, for example.
Maybe. I mean, in the ideal world, you want to do them as late as reasonably possible so that you could reuse as much of compilation as possible and speed it up. I mean, some common operators, are the ones like I talked about for changing literals, for changing comparisons, for removing the entirety of a method, for example. Those are some common operators. And I don't imagine that... that any of those would be a problem being later.
Maybe.
Let's see. Just because I can't remember ones. Oh, yes. So Pitt has a really nice list of, you can look at, if anybody wants. So I just dropped the link in the thing of all the operators that it has, right? So invert negatives is an operator. And things to change, true and false returns, and other things, et cetera. I guess the big thing would be the earlier that a mutation is I was going to say that the earlier that we do it, the closer, as you said, you will be to the source code. And I think there, that's a reporting thing, right? It'll be more obvious what was changed in relation to the original source code.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Even if the end effect was, the same. I guess perhaps it'd be, because I don't really know, we could try starting with it as late as possible. And then if we discover that's problematic for reporting or causing us to run into junk, where if the operator is earlier, we wouldn't, we could always move it forward based on that.
Yeah. I think it's to get the kind of performance that you want, it's simpler to implement the caching mechanism for the just prior to code gen pass, because effectively, we know that the code gen pass does not mutate the AST. It does do stuff with reachability things that like resolves like deferred reifications. So like you probably need to like reset the reification system or something so that it resolves them late, like. So that it re-resolves them. So you probably a few things you need to reset, but because it doesn't mutate the AST inputs, it's fairly straightforward to just give a slightly different variation. I mean, actually introducing the mutations is its own sort of like persistent data structure problem, I guess, where you don't want to probably copy the entire AST, or maybe you do, maybe you don't care. I guess you could just copy the entire AST each time, but maybe there's a smarter way to do it with persistent data structures. If you try to do it in the earlier stages and you want to have comparable performance, you would want to, well, I guess, first of all, it's like predicated on the idea of like which passes are dominating the compilation time right now. I think right now, compilation time is dominated by LLVM for large programs rather than like it's what happens after code gen anyway. Yeah. But I know that some programs, such as if you have very large type unions, I ran into that one before. If you have a very large type union, it makes certain earlier passes a lot slower.
And all the things I'm talking about putting in the compiler also involve basically having some sort of way to save out the state of the AST at a certain point and restart the compiler with the optional mutation pass from that point and do a mutation and then take it all the way through to the end, which is itself, there is no machinery to do that right now,
Yeah.
It's not the hardest thing in the world to do, but it's certainly not a thing that's there right now versus here's a tool which is just going to know how to operate on a Pony AST and take it from, just like basically where we would be at the syntax point.
Yeah. If you wanted to have good performance with that, like you might have to like have the kind of sort of I don't know what word to use to describe it, but the kind of caching mechanism that I've always wanted to build, which is and I, you know, tried for various amounts of time half-heartedly, I guess, to build caching at that is like more incremental than the whole program, so that you can say, all right, well, I've mutated this particular method in this particular type in this particular pony package, but the rest of these packages are unchanged. Although they may suddenly become reachable, or we may be doing a new reification of them that we haven't seen before. So it gets a little bit complicated, like understanding the dependencies of one thing on another, right? And having that be fine-grained enough that you can do meaningful caching. It's a complicated problem to solve of its own, like completely unrelated to the mutation testing, although it would be arguably a prerequisite for doing performant mutation testing at an early pass.
So I wonder, based on all of the things that we don't know about this, right? And where the real bottlenecks and everything would be, if assuming someone like me wanted to take this on at some point, if an ideal first step would be to write something which, you know, uses the AST handling stuff from the Pony compiler, but is not a Pony C pass in any type of way, and, you know, basically runs up to some early pass, like right before Sugar, like you were talking about, and can do mutations and then perhaps just dump out the source from that initially in some type of way back to Pony, which could be fed into the compiler, and just see like where like performance implications are for things, and how fast or slow is something like that before we really went into the compiler itself and started making a bunch of changes. Right.
I think for the how fast or slow, like to understand like the performance impacts, I think probably the thing to do is, well, at least as a starting point, you could assume that the new stuff you're inserting is of negligible performance impact, and then just use the existing like CLI args that we have today that say run to this specific pass. And so if you pick like a large program, like a program that you know compile times is going to be a sensitive topic for, and then say, okay, run until this pass, and just get those timings. That's something that you could do without any modification to the source code today.
That's a good point. And use that to try and identify where we would really be getting performance wins, because the entire idea behind doing it, quote unquote, in the compiler, one of the ideas is, you know, to, you know, eke out as much performance of it as possible to make mutation testing more tenable in terms of the amount of time that it would take on a large code base. So yes, that is a good idea. That is a good idea. Interesting. Yes.
Yeah. So like that'd be my first like advice. And that, yeah. So like if we were to find, for example, that like on the large program, it's like almost all the time is during code gen or after code gen anyway, then we could kind of put it anywhere. Like, I don't know. I think it's conceptually nicer to put it near the beginning, but if you have to do complicated tricks to get it to be performant, then that's not as nice, obviously. I don't have those complicated tricks in place right now. But like conceptually, it's nice if you could say, all right, I can guarantee that this mutation, that no matter what mutation operator I think of, if the mutation operator results in a compilation error, I don't need to show that to the user. And we silently just kind of filter that out or have it as, you know, extra debugging information for us to work on an operator that will generate less junk mutations. But I guess the downside of earlier passes, aside from potential performance issues, the downside of earlier passes would be not having as much information. If we wanted to make more sophisticated operators that relied, for example, on type information, I'm just kind of look at the defaults in PIT. So we have conditionals boundary, which is just changing, less than or equals. So that's something that it's actually interesting because I think that turns into a method in Pony in a late pass. And so you'd be like replacing this method call with that method call, but there's no actual guarantee that the other, that the type you're working with actually implements that method, unless you check the type first, or unless like you check that, right? So if we do it in a late pass, we'd want to have some logic in there to check, all right, well, I'm changing this from a less than equals to a greater than, but I need to actually check and see if the left-hand type implements the greater than method. And if it doesn't, I can't, that would be a junk one. And I can't proceed because if I did, it would be like probably a compiler crash during the code gen pass when it like failed to look up the method or something like that. So like an assert fail or a compiler crash in the code gen pass. And if you do it in an early pass, then it's like, okay, well, I tried the mutation and I got a compilation error. So I just silently hit that. So that would be like 10 of two different approaches to the same thing. One of them, the later pass version requires us to add in some checks. So it's, I guess, extra work on our part to add in checks to make sure that we're not hitting that issue or like that are sort of redundant with the normal type checking stuff that happened before. But if we do it in the early pass, it's like a lazier way. We don't have to have the redundant checks, but it's also maybe less efficient in that we spend more time on junk mutations, although that may be a fairly rare case. So it may be not a problem to sort of optimistically assume that it will work and then only, you know, deal with it later. So I guess the early pass is more more conducive to that kind of type checking issue, I think. So a conditional boundary, we have increments and decrements, invert negatives. So these are all things that like would benefit from knowing that it's a number type, right? Or like, I guess these are not all things, but that, for example, invert negatives. So, okay, well, this is taking things that are currently negated and making them positive, but I'm not sure if it takes things that are positive and making them negative. But again, you'd want to have, if you were taking something positive and making it negative, you'd want to make sure that it actually implemented that method or that it was a numeric type.
Yes.
So same thing with math mutator. To make sure it actually implements that method. Negative conditionals, void methods.
Yes,
okay, a void method has no return, so it can be removed, presumably removing the side effect that your test was relying on. That one I think relies on, I guess it doesn't necessarily need type checking, because you could just say the Pony equivalent of a void method is just something that I'm not using the return value of, even if it has one, I'm just not using it. So that would be kind of the same idea. Empty returns, that would benefit from type checking. I don't know. I think I think a lot of this stuff actually would benefit from type checking. And so that makes me, even if it's extra work to check that it's not a junk mutation, it's maybe easier to identify good mutations at the start if we have type information.
Yeah, I think so too, thinking about it. Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't been thinking about that as we went along in the conversation. But yes, I mean, that was one of the things that initially led me to think as well for right before CodeGen is that, you know, we can be much more intelligent about whether an operator actually gets applied or not and which operators are applicable at a given point in time, because it's not just a bunch of symbols. We actually understand, like, semantically what it is doing at that point.
Yeah. And we can quickly find something that's numeric and change the number in some way, or something that's a string and make it an empty string.
Yep.
This is a place where it would be really useful to have the separation between the separation we don't have between like type inference / implication and separately type checking for evaluating whether the inferred or implied types meet the constraints that they must. Because if we had those separated a bit, we could insert the pass in between those two and benefit a little bit from the type information, but then also benefit from the type checking that follows as like a separate thing. But right now it's all in the same pass. So there's no injecting between those two right now. So yeah, I mean, yeah, I think just before CodeGen is a reasonable place to try. Or actually you might do like just before the verify pass, because at least that has some checks, right? At least you benefit from a few checks. Because you don't, and that should be a quick pass.
I don't remember, what does the final pass do?
I'm checking the.
I remember what all the others do. I don't remember what.
Check that finalizers do not perform any restricted operations, such as creating actors or sending messages. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you're right. After verify.
Well, I was thinking maybe before verify.
Maybe. Oh yeah, because verify doesn't change the AST, right?
It may set and use flags according to the blurb written in pass.h.
All right, but it doesn't actually mutate the AST. So yeah, but completeness does. So after completeness.
Yeah, although the set and use flags may be problematic for you too. Like the reason I wasn't trying to be pedantic, I think that may actually, it depends on how you do the AST copying, right? I guess it depends on how deeply you need to copy. So you could either make sure the verify pass flag usage is idempotent, or you need to be doing like a fully deep copy to avoid. Yeah, and you may be doing a fully deep copy anyway, because it's hard. I think it's. I mean, it's not that hard, but it's easier to do a deep copy, even if it's not as cheap. It's conceptually easier because you don't have to try to disentangle the AST tree to like surgically remove a node and then put a new node in its place. Yeah. I think that'd be a reasonable place to do it.
Yeah. No. Excellent. Oh, this was good. Okay. Yes. Thank you. I definitely needed to bounce like some ideas for actual implementation off of somebody. Very helpful.
Yep. Sounds good. Anything else that people want to raise for special topics today?
Just for people who are listening along later on this, when this makes it into the last week in Pony for this coming week, which will be on the website, which right? So which will be the June 11th one, 2023. The two links, one that Joe put in to the chat and one that I put into the chat, I'll include those in the last week in Pony entry for this.
And that was the link for Mole and the link for PyTest or Pit Test, however you pronounce
it. Pit Test. Yeah, it's in particular it the mutators that it has to give an idea so that people can have an idea of what are common mutators.
And that, yeah, walking through that list of common mutators is really helpful for thinking through in practice what, yeah, whether type information is helpful or yeah, that was important. Especially, I think, in Pony, where the arithmetic stuff and the comparison operators all boil down to method calls. Like a lot of this boils down to just swapping one method call to another method call. And you need to make sure the other method call is implemented. And yeah, in order for it to not be a junk one. Okay, any other special topics today? All right then. Thanks everyone for attending and those who listen along to the recording later. I'll see you next week.